executive is doing PR damage control for the area's Roman Catholic Archdiocese to help it contain the fallout from a burgeoning sexual abuse crisis. Attorneys for about 24 men suing the church say in court filings the documents they obtained show the NFL team aided the Archdiocese in its pattern and practice of concealing its crimes. Saints attorneys dispute any suggestion that the team helped the church cover up crimes, calling such claims outrageous. You're listening to the home of Vancouver Hockey, Sportsnet 650.
CISL Vancouver is Sportsnet 650, the official home of the Canucks. Listen live at sportsnet.ca/650 through the Sportsnet app or the Radio Player Canada app. This is the Scott Rintoul Show.
Besser shoots and scores right off the draw.
First career NHL goal, Quinn Hughes.
On the official home of the Canucks.
And it's Markstrom again, this time with the glove.
And it comes and it shoots, scores!
Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Vancouver. Sportsnet 650, the home of the Canucks. Bick Nizar and Jamie Dodd. Here with you for the next 2 hours. We'll take you through the Scott Rintoul Show as he's on holiday back on Monday as the Canucks get ready to play St. Louis. But it's two of us here till
here we are.
Till noon, Canucks Central. Then we're doing that till Reach Deep, till 1 o'clock. A lot going on today. Trent Call's coming up today on Reach Deep. Plus, the program going to be on location at the Canucks Autism Network Pro-Am Draft, which is happening
tonight.
Very
cool.
So you'll hear from a bunch of Canuck alumni later today. Brandon Morrison, all those guys going to be on location there for that. Kirk McLean, a lot of people.
Who have you got going number one there at the draft?
That's a tough decision because, you know, Wachs has made the point that you don't necessarily just want the best players.
Right.
Like, if your goal is to win the tournament, cool, okay, go do that. But the goal should be to, like, have the best experience. Considering this has been a fundraising effort and it's a great cause and all those, but, you know, you kind of want to get your money's worth.
Absolutely.
To some degree. And so you should get someone that's going to hang out in the locker room, crush some drinks, tell you some stories. And I'm not taking anything away from Henrik and Daniel Sedin. I'm sure that great guys and sneaky funny, as Sat was saying yesterday. I feel like someone else on the list might pique some interest in that regard.
Definitely Bertuzzi is going to get some love.
I feel like he should go first.
You want... And I don't think you want to completely discount the on-ice aspect. You want someone who's going to, you know, take the games relatively seriously.
Absolutely.
And try to make sure everyone's having fun on the ice and facilitate and all that.
Like, BMO is going to be a popular one?
BMO, is, I would say. He's regular guest on the Scott Rintoul Show. Great guy. Lots of stories. He would be up there on my list for sure. A center, a natural passer, get everyone involved.
I think it's not like you're getting Kirk McLean to play goal.
No, you're getting Kirk McLean to hang out with Kirk McLean.
No, right, but I don't even think he's playing
goal, right? Sure.
So it's a goalie playing skater. Yeah, he's always going to be awesome, but you know, it decreases his draft status.
Yep.
It'd be funny if you had like the character questions on guys coming to do a draft. Like
they got to do a combine.
Like, these local businesses that are generate all this money be like, I don't know, I'm hearing things about how he is in the room and. I don't know.
Questions, character questions have come up.
Is he really committed to hockey?
He's going to drop to the second round.
Is he prepared to do everything possible to try to win the Canucks Autism Network Pro-Am? Fair questions.
We asked him what he would do if there was a giant snake outside the locker room.
Yeah.
I don't really like his answer.
Yeah, you know, that would be funny if you had or not necessarily a conference, just like an interview process.
Yeah.
And it was filmed, all these great
businesses. That'd be good. That'd be great.
Just the whole draft process laid out. Program's going to be there. We're here for the next 2 hours. We got John Mattis from The Score coming up at 11:35. Also, Greg Wyshynski coming up at 12:05 during Canucks Central. Both guys on location at the All-Star Game in St. Louis. We heard from Jacob Markstrom yesterday. You can go listen to that. Sportsnet.ca/650. And while we're getting ready for tonight, which should be a lot of fun, Elias Pettersson competing in the hardest shot, Quinn Hughes in the fastest skater, and Jacob Markstrom in
the goalie one.
All the goalie things that he has to do. We were kind of just asking, which sport has the best skills competition? Like, I'm going to watch tonight. I usually watch the skills competition for hockey. I just don't watch the game.
Sure.
The Pro Bowl, I watched some of the skills competition yesterday. Did you see the dodgeball thing?
Yeah, a little bit. This is a classic, new age sports fan. Yeah. I just saw the highlights on social media.
We'll get into it.
Sure.
But I'm not going to watch the Pro Bowl, but I'll watch a skills competition because it's goofy, it's fun. That's what All-Star Weekend is supposed
absolutely.
To be. It's supposed to be goofy and fun. But realistically, what sport has the best skills competition?
So, first of all, I'll say I think the NFL's might be the most underrated because it has so little buzz, but it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
No one ever talks about it. This really comes down to, and it's like with so many other sports debates, it's like peak moments versus the totality of it, right? Because in the NBA and MLB, the home run derby and the slam dunk contest are iconic.
I'm done with the home run derby.
Oh, come on, man.
I'm over it.
Oh!
It's too long.
Who doesn't like dingers, though?
It's too long. It'd be better.
See, I think they've slimmed it down a little bit. I think the format they have right now is really good.
If they just took, the two best guys and that was the event, I'd be more into that.
But you got to give some love to everyone else, though, right?
It's too long.
See, but when some guy gets on a heater and goes for, 25, 27 in one round, that's awesome.
How long does it take? 2 hours?
And the vibe in the park. Nah, it doesn't take 2 hours. I don't know.
Like 90
minutes? 90 minutes, probably.
Well, it's like 10 minutes per guy, right?
It's not 10 minutes.
I feel like it was longer than 2 hours this past year.
If it does go longer than two hours,
that's too long. I'll agree to that.
It's just too repetitive. That's what it is.
Sure. I guess I just listen. I'm a sucker for home runs. What are you gonna do? They're awesome.
I love home runs.
And the vibe in the ballpark when someone does get on a run is awesome. And just for the moment, it's great. Now, as the kind of quirkiness and the totality of it, you're only showing off one skill. As you said, it can be pretty repetitive.
Does baseball even do other ones?
No, it's just the home run derby.
Yeah.
The NBA. I know, and a lot of people are like, oh, all the dunks have been done. They're not original anymore. It's stupid. Listen, it's the slam dunk competition. It's awesome. I love it still. It's great.
The reality never matches the hype.
Yeah, sometimes it does.
In recent memory, the Aaron Gordon,
Levine.
Levine one was great. But you need more dunks in it. And I love the dunk contest. And to me, that's the crowning jewel of what a skills competition
absolutely.
Should be. But the rest of the night, the obstacle course,
three-point shootout's all right.
It's kind of like the home run.
Yeah.
It was cool. Larry Bird, the calling a shot, doing the finger wag and all that. That was great. But it gets repetitive to me now.
And I will say both the three-point contest and the home run derby have the same flaw, which is you can have the best round, but then not win. You know what I mean? If someone goes off in the first round and it's like, wow, that was an amazing moment. That's the moment you want to finish on. But then they have to go out for the final, and they hit, two buckets. And it's like, oh, well, that's kind of
I'd rather the home run derby be, six guys, and you get 10 minutes.
All hitting at once?
No. You can go in sequential order, but that'd be funny. Just run it up to the plate. But that's it. It's 1 hour. You're whoever gets the most in 10 minutes, that's it.
The here's my defense of the home run derby. It only delivers once every 5 years at this point, probably once every 4 years, something like that. But its highs are higher than anything else that any other sport does. Like the Aaron Gordon, Zach LaVine one, that is a legitimately iconic moment in recent NBA history in a way that I'm not sure other skills competitions can match. You're right. The rest of it is Although I will say I stand for the NBA Celebrity All-Star Game.
What? What, you want to watch Kevin Hart hit layups?
Wynn Butler, lead singer for Arcade Fire, proud Canadian. He's 6'5", and he just holds down the low post, grabs the boards, dominates the paint.
Just backing down. Tom Cruise.
Gets one of the Property Brothers on him. He just takes him to school in the paint. You love to see it.
Draining threes from the suburbs.
Does he got a sky hook or something
Yeah, man. He's old school.
So... the totality of the events, and that's why the NHL and the NFL
might actually be the best.
They might actually be the best because you can sit down and watch them for a prolonged time, and they have more than just the one event that's interesting.
Yeah.
And tonight, I know there's a lot of people that were like, oh, how come Elias Pettersson's not in the most accurate shooter? I think the marquee event in the NHL one is the hardest shot. Fastest skater is great, but
hardest shot by a nose.
Yeah.
The accuracy, hardest shot, and fastest skater are all great. But the one that has the most visual pop is the hardest shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's in the marquee event. That's cool.
And he's the only forward in the event.
Also fantastic. And he's not a favorite
absolutely not.
By any stretch, but I'm interested to see what he does tonight. Because I think I think he'll surprise. If he clocks triple digits, is anyone going to be surprised?
No. If I had to bet, I'd bet triple digits.
What's the mark? I think I'm looking at 102.
Yeah, 101, 101, 102, something like that. Low triple digits. The problem is really he needs to win. He needs Shea Weber to just have an off night. Maybe miss the net, something like that, right? That's
what can happen. You only get so many attempts.
Shea Weber is the odds-on favorite by a long shot in this one. But even then, you look like I'd probably take Victor Hedman over him. You know, Seth Jones is a dark horse candidate for me, I think, for sure in this one.
But, okay, so overall, I guess this is two questions. Who's got the best event?
Yeah.
And who's got the best competition? Right? And I think the best event is still the dunk contest.
Yeah.
But the overall, I don't know, I think NHL.
I think the overall, the one.
The NFL has done a good job of, like, instituting props and kind of wackiness into it. And they have, like, the fun games. They have, like, the QB accuracy one. They introduced one yesterday, which was, like, a QB versus the DB one, which is really cool to watch. You can check out those videos online. And I did the same thing. I watched them all online.
Sure.
But as far as what translates to the actual game, skills competition, NHL to me stands out. 650, 650 if you want to check in.
The one I'm most excited to just sit down and watch in totality is the NHL. For sure.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's so rare for NHL players to get a chance to kind of let their hair down and show a little personality.
That's part of it,
and
too.
And this is the one venue where they do, and you actually feel like they're having fun and they're living in the moment. That is a huge part of it.
Because it's supposed to be a fun event, right?
Yeah.
And the NBA has a lot of fun during
this. That's
season.
The thing. It's the like, NBA yeah, you, so you guys are always fun. Having fun. Yeah. It's no different than a normal day.
It's chaos during the season. They're always on Instagram, just posting some sort of like, oh, owned you, can't wait till the next matchup or something like that. They joke around a lot.
Yeah.
And you get ready for the All-Star game, and it's more casual, but we've seen it translate. The NHL has provided some cool moments. Obviously, PK Subban, Ovechkin, Malkin, all those guys have done something funny. Yeah, you're right. It feels like it's more of an expression of their personality.
Yeah.
It feels like tonight.
More organic. Like, they're genuinely there having fun, enjoying the moment. And, you know, for Canucks fans specifically, three guys there, including a first-time a couple first-time representatives, right, in Quinn Hughes and Jacob Markstrom, and getting a chance to see a little bit more of their personality, seeing how they react to the game. It's so popular and easy to rip on the All-Star game, but for the skills competition, I think it's genuinely interesting and fun for fans.
And let's talk about those three guys and really the team on a whole. It's Bikinisar, Jamie Dodd here filling in for Scott Rintoul on the Scott Rintoul Show. Who was back on Monday. Those three guys, and you know, they're kind of becoming the leaders of the team as far as, you know, where they go, or as they go, the team will go. What team are the Canucks trending towards being? Or is there a model that you listening, you want the Canucks to pursue that we've seen in the past? And I don't mean in accomplishment, because then you would say, oh, the teams that's all have good teams. Yeah. Who have all won the cups recently. Just stylistically, who do you feel like this team is trending towards becoming?
Well, I don't know about stylistically necessarily in terms of their play, but in terms of roster construction. So this is the best way to answer this question is there's kind of best case scenario, middle scenario, worst case scenario,
okay.
Right? So let's start at like best case scenario. I do see some similarities to the Bruins. And when Jim Benning was hired, of course, what was the buzz catchphrase? It was the Boston model.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's actually turned into something completely different than the Boston model that we were referring to back in 2014, 2015. But you just look at how Boston has success right now, and it's a dominant, high-end, super-skilled top line. And the Canucks trending in that direction. They have one of the best top units, top trios when they play together in the NHL right now. A stud defenseman in Torrey Krug, a strong goaltending tandem, and then solid depth throughout the lineup and versatile depth throughout the lineup. And I'm not saying it's a one-to-one comparison. They have guys like Charlie McAvoy, and obviously Geno Chara is still there. But just the basic structure of, okay, an elite line, a workhorse defenseman who we rely on, and strong goaltending, and then depth everywhere else on the roster. That's kind of what you hope the Canucks will grow into in the next two or three seasons. And again, this is kind of a best-case scenario option for Vancouver.
I think the team I'm looking at is maybe L.A. And I know that's, you chose the team that won a bunch of cups.
Sure.
There, Vic, way to go. But you kind of look at the players who are involved, right? Like Anze Kopitar was never really considered like the best center in the NHL. And it's going to be tough for Elias Pettersson to do that. He might get there, but it's going to be tough because he lives in a reality where Connor McDavid exists.
Kopitar was in the top five discussion, sure. For sure.
And
he was never number one with a bullet.
And one of the things that really aided his cause was how strong he was defensively, right?
Yep.
And then you need this D-man who's new on the scene and had just this different vibe to him. Drew Doughty was that guy for LA. I know Canucks fans all remember him bobbing his head on the bench and all that. And, he was doing the spinoramas in the Olympics. That mobile young D-man. And that's kind of the pillar of this team, right? Those two guys in their respective positions are going to be viewed as top five players in their position. And, look, I have an expectation at some point in his career, Quinn Hughes is going to be consistently in the Norris conversation.
It's certainly trending in that direction.
Right? And so that's the same thing with Drew Doughty. There was almost a lifetime achievement award to him winning the Norris Trophy that year, but you wouldn't dispute that he's been one of the top four, top three D-men over this course of his career so far. And then you start looking at the rest of the pieces, and like Tanner Pearson fits in, a guy who fits into both roles. And the style of hockey that Travis Green wants to play feels like it mimics what we saw from LA those few times. Be hard on the puck. And what do we see from LA? They were just devastatingly playing downhill on teams.
They were an elite possession team.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And I think that's where the Canucks want to get to eventually. And to some degree, again, not stylistically, but like JT Miller feels like a Dustin Brown type where he can be tough on the puck as the winger, as a guy who can give you top line minutes, right? Better production and a more evolved player, but someone who's really tough to play against.
And even a little bit of like a Justin Williams there, where, Justin Williams
That'd be a good name,
kind of the Corsi all-star in the early days of the analytics movement, right? Like he just always has the puck. It's always in the other team's zone when he was on the ice when he was with the Kings. I like that. I do think the Canucks, their style is trending more towards skill, and that's partly the NHL as a whole.
It's more modern, right? Sure, but I'm thinking the modernized version of
that. Okay. Yeah, I like that. And I mean, the other one that's kind of easy, but I do think there's some validity to it, is Colorado. And of course, Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes are going to be compared a lot throughout their careers, but there's a reason for it. They're very similar players in a lot of respects. And again, a team with really, really good high-end skill, some interesting young skills sprinkled elsewhere throughout the lineup beyond just their top-level pieces. The thing holding me back from, saying, they're on this trajectory is, as much as I like Elias Pettersson, I'm not sure he gets to Nathan McKinnon's level at any point. Mm-hmm. That's not a slight on Elias Pettersson.
Sure.
Nathan McKinnon's probably the second-best player in the league right now, so that's rarefied air. And then we're also trending towards the Canucks are going to take a different approach, likely on their goaltending situation, than Colorado is. We've seen Colorado have success without spending big money in the crease. And I'm not saying the Canucks are going to, break the bank to pay Jacob Markstrom, but it's probably going to be more of a, this is our clear number one guy who we're relying on, and then we'll look for cheap depth behind him.
Okay, so that's the best case scenarios we talked about. Let's quickly touch on the worst case scenarios. That I don't envision a Edmonton like bottoming out for long stretches, but is there a middling team that we're just like, they never really became what we thought they might become?
Winnipeg? Still got lots of good young forwards, but their defense just kind of evaporated. And Tyler Myers is involved in both situations, but with Chris Tanev and Alex Edler coming up, there's uncertainty there, not just with their contract situations, but with their age, their availability and all of that. And in 3 years, there's a possibility neither of those guys are in the lineup or neither of those guys are healthy or neither of the guys are able to contribute. And if that's the case, do the Canucks have the depth coming to fill those holes and still be competitive? And again, Winnipeg, they have Connor Hellebuck, who was able to hold them in games. They have a great selection of young, productive forwards. But once they started having to pay those forwards, they had to make some hard decisions that weakened the roster elsewhere. And like you said, it looked like they were a team on the upswing and they just never quite got there, or at least they were never able to stay there. So I don't know if worst case scenario, but that's kind of, if things don't go smoothly for the Canucks, that's a team I'm looking at.
I kind of look at Nashville.
Yeah, similar spot this season, right?
Similar idea, right? That you can have success, and they've had a lot of success as far as consistently making the playoffs. There's been a couple of dips, obviously, but they eventually go to a finals, don't win it. But to me, they'll always meet a baseline Nashville, right? That's part and parcel of them creating such a surplus of D-men that they're just a defensive factory. Like, they've lost four number one D-men, yeah, and haven't blinked as a franchise. That's stunning. Whereas here in this franchise, Quinn Hughes arrives, and it's like, oh my God, right, this is amazing.
Yeah, we're talking like, oh my God, if Chris Tanev leaves, what are we going to do? And
yes,
love Chris Tanev, but yes, it's, you look at the quality of players they've lost, it's totally different.
They've lost Subban, Suter, Weber. Yeah. It just goes on and on and on, and they've persisted. Now, to me, there's a baseline that the Canucks will meet. I do think it's their forward that are probably going to carry them down the road, but you know, 2 years from now, it does feel like there's going to be a surplus of forwards that are fairly productive and fairly high end.
Yep.
That suddenly they'll have that constant, okay, we're always around the playoffs. We're always around the playoffs. They should be getting in, but how do you reach the peak of that, right?
Yeah.
And to me, again, we're talking worst case scenarios of what this team could become. That to me is like Nashville.
And it's telling that, for both of us, the kind of worst case are still teams in the playoff hunt, still teams with a lot of upside if things break their way, because no one's looking at this version of the Canucks, and you know they're not going to bottom out again in the next 2 or 3 years, barring some absolute catastrophe.
The reason this comes up is the teams around the West. Like, the West hasn't been good last year, and everyone said, oh, it's going to get better. You have to get 99 points to make the playoffs. Well, guess what?
It's
you don't.
Yeah.
And the other conversation we wanted to have is, which teams have the least exciting future? And we'll get that. We'll get into that on the other side. We'll talk about it with John Mattis as well. But you know, just talking about where the stream is trending towards, it's going to be tough for them to bottom out, because a lot of teams in the Western Conference have to make significant changes. We did, yep, the stock up, stock down the other day, and as far as teams that were trending up, we came up with three. It's not that many. So they're always going to be hovering around that playoff line. We'd all like them to get to a stage of running away with the division, and I do think that could be in the future. It just, what's the baseline is what we're talking about, and the baseline is going to be they're going to be always in the conversation for some time now.
And I know you and Scott have talked about the idea of sorting the league into tiers, right? There's the tier one obvious contenders, there's the tier three bottom feeders, and then there's a big clump in tier two. And what we're talking about are, can the Canucks break in and be tier one mainstays for a period of 3, 4, 5 seasons, or are they going to be
high end,
like Winnipeg, Nashville, where they're just always kind of in tier two? That's the difference, you know. And as you said, they're going to have a surplus of forwards. They're going to have some tough decisions to make, and it's whether they get those decisions that will determine if they can break into the top tier.
650-650 if you want to chime in as well. It is Bick Nizar and Jamie Dodd. Part of the surplus of forwards is how do they get developed at the AHL level. Just a programming reminder, Trent Cull will join Reach Deep, Dan Riccio, and Dom Shermati filling in for Randeep Janda today, who's away in Mexico. So they'll be talking to Trent Cull about all the developments that are happening in Utica. We'll get to more, including John Mattis from The Score in St. Louis at the All-Star Game. What's Petey, Markey, Hughes all up to? And the expectations for tonight at All-Star festivities. On the way, here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Somebody once told me the world is gonna roll me. I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed. She was looking kind of dumb with her face.
This is the Scott Rintoul Show.
The shape of an L on her forehead. Well, the years start coming.
It is All-Star weekend. Canucks back in action on Monday, which is when Scott Rintoul will reappear on the Scott Rintoul Show. And get ready for a game day.
Like, what? Season hiding. He's
he is.
Jump out from behind the bushes and reappear.
We haven't announced where he is.
That's true. We haven't. We've been very cagey.
He's posting on Instagram, but we haven't announced where he is.
I'm not going to blow up his spot.
That's what I'm saying. He might have a protected Instagram account. I don't know. It's Bick Nizar, Jamie Dodd here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. We want to get into this conversation because part of the excitement for the Canucks, now that they've reached this baseline level of being in the playoff conversation, is how long are they going to stay in it? And one of the reasons they probably will stay in it for some time, as far as years go, is, you know, the Western Conference, not that exciting as far as teams that are trending in a direction to surpass the Canucks. We did the exercise of teams trending up, and it was a pretty short list of teams we felt had bright futures. So we wanted to flip it and say, okay, which teams have the least exciting future here? Not even just in the Western Conference, just across the league.
So San Jose has got to be on that list.
Yeah.
Just the combination of bad factors. They have the kind of the trifecta, you know? They have a lot of money tied up in questionable contracts. They have traded their first-round pick in a very bad season for them. So they're going to be giving away a high, high draft pick.
Top six pick.
Yep. And they don't have a great prospect pool. And though that combination makes it really, really difficult to easily reload or even to tear down and rebuild if they want to go that way.
I do want to give them some benefit of the doubt that they've done a pretty good job of having their prospects meet a baseline.
Yep.
Right? Because one of the bets they made is, okay, if we're losing players, well, we've had Timo Meier, we've had Thomas Hertl, we've had Melker Carlson, we've had Sorensen, Goudreau, LeBanc, all these guys, and they've proven that they are third liners and they can be that. And we can usher in a new generation of those guys. So in one regard, okay, they don't have a great prospect pool. I do think they'll get a lot of players into their system. It's just how high end
are they
going to
be impact?
That's going to be.
That's the problem. And man, okay, so everyone talks about the Erik Karlsson contract. Yeah, he's still a very solid player, but it's a worrisome one to say the least. Brent Burns is 34. He's under contract till 2025.
The Vlasic one is the killer.
Vlasic. Yeah. So in 2024, 2025, they're paying $11 million, $11.5 million to Erik Karlsson, $8 million to Brent Burns, $7 million to Mark Edward Vlasic. That's a long time to be locked in to a top three defense group that can't get you in the playoff hunt by itself, as we've seen. And that's not going to change over the next four or five seasons, right? It's just going to get worse from here. The other one that doesn't get brought up as much, but has pretty much got to be just as concerning as those, Martin Jones is under contract for four more seasons after this one. He is struggling in a bad way, and this is not a new thing for Martin Jones. They're paying him $5.75 million for the next four seasons after this one.
And we should note, yesterday they made some announcements, a new president for Shark Sports and Entertainment, and also the ownership giving Doug Wilson, the general manager, the old vote of confidence, which doing so publicly is always interesting. But look, they've got confidence in their guy. But moving forward, you talk about this job, how interesting it is. It does cause some concerns of, doesn't really know how bright the future is. It's a lot of pressure on Logan Couture to take another step in his career, and he's 30 years old.
It's hard to do that. I mean, you're relying so much on Timo Meier and Thomas Hertl, really. Evander Kane too. I like Evander Kane a lot as a player, but we kind of know what he is.
Yep.
But you need those other guys to take big, big step forwards. If you're trying to look on the bright side, if you're a Sharks fan and you're trying to say, okay, why isn't this the most depressing situation in the league? It starts with Doug Wilson, right? Because he has the track record. He's been able to keep this team in competition for so long. He's the best asset this organization has, but he's got a big, big job in front of him.
The team I look at is Montreal, who it needs like one more impact guy. It's a lot of pressure on Jesperi Kotkaniemi to be the guy. And he might top out as a second-line center, which is great, but they really keep searching for a first-line center. And you look at their salary structure, there's a lot of guys coming up in the next 2 years that they're constantly, it feels like, they don't really have a tentpole. Like, what are they building around? Is it just Carey Price? And you know how I feel about building around a goaltender.
Yep.
Let's go to St. Louis. Our good friend John Mattitz from The Score NHL joining us now. John, how is St. Louis?
It's good. I mean, the weather has been literally raining the whole time, except for right now when I look out. But other than that, good times.
Well, we're glad you could be indoors on the phone during the very brief window of lack of precipitation. So what's been the mood like in St. Louis as everyone descends upon the All-Star weekend? I know everyone here is getting ready to look at three players tonight. Just the overall sense of what the season has been from the players as we reach the All-Star break?
I think, well, I guess I'll touch on a couple of common questions during media day, because I think that kind of illustrates where people are coming from in terms of the buzz of the event. A lot of talk about Alexander Ovechkin and him challenging Gretzky for the goal mark. Obviously, he's approaching 700 goals, so that's on the top of everyone's mind. And, you know, you ask 10 people and about 9 of them say, if he's healthy, he can do it. So that's been a takeaway. Also, a lot of talk about the Blues, obviously, being in St. Louis and what they were able to accomplish last year and how dominant they've been this year. So those are the main points. And I guess it's nice to be in an environment where the players are just kind of have their hair down and are a little more open to showing their personality and being themselves versus the usual, where they're very professional and very kind of centered in on the daily activities at the rink. So that's been nice. And I mean, things haven't really even started yet, I guess you could say, with skills tonight and the 3-on-3 tomorrow. So still lots to go here.
And, John, it's kind of a happy coincidence that the game is in St. Louis this season. Of course, they had the big breakthrough in the Stanley Cup last year. A celebration of hockey in St. Louis. What's the vibe you've got, not just from the players, but from the fans and the organization? How good is it to be either a fan or a member of the St. Louis Blues right now?
It feels probably pretty darn good. I would say you hit on a good point there in that question. It's a celebration of the city and its hockey community as well as the Blues. Like 20 years ago, St. Louis was nothing in terms of minor hockey, in terms of building up and producing NHL players. Now, I mean, there's about a dozen in the NHL that have links to Missouri. The Blues players, for whatever reason, have really enjoyed St. Louis and have stayed. So, you know, you retire and you start coaching your son, and all of a sudden he's getting NHL caliber coaching and lessons and skill development, and he turns into an NHLer. I mean, you look at the Tkachuk family, perfect example. So that's a big part of it. And just the fact that the Blues have been in the league for decades and finally won, finally, you know, we're able to really celebrate a consistently good team over the years. If you think back to the 90s, they had their moments. They were able to acquire Gretzky at one point. They had Brett Hall. There were some pretty, high-profile names attached to the organization, Al MacInnis, Chris Pronger, and they just never were able to really get over the hump, but now they have. So there's a real sense of just, like, I guess, calmness and just being proud of being either from St. Louis as an original resident, or of being an alumni and coming back and really being proud of what the current team has accomplished.
Fans in this market are always blown away by Quinn Hughes' poise in every moment, where he just seems to take everything in stride. You saw him yesterday at Media Day. Is he wide-eyed, or is he just able to take this experience, again, in stride?
Yeah, you know, I mentioned a minute ago about guys letting their hair down. I'd say Quinn Hughes is one of the only guys who was exactly the same as he always is, at least in front of the media. And you never know if that's actually his personality when he's just hanging out with his brother Jack or some buddies from back home or whatever. But, yeah, it's kind of the same old story with Quinn in terms of that perspective. And that's totally fine because, I mean, on the ice, he's a treat to watch. So in terms of entertainment value, he leaves it for what really matters. And, yeah, I think there's a little buzz around him, too, because with the PHWA releasing the midseason awards, he ended up second, and I voted him first. But that does really show that people are paying attention. Maybe this weekend it'll even boost his stock a little bit down the stretch here.
What led to you putting him first on your ballot?
I just think that, you know, him and Makar are pretty comparable. It's not like I think he's light years better or having a much better season than Cam Makar, but I just look at the body of work, the attention to detail on the defensive end, and his ability to just kind of control the pace of the game. So I just think he's a more well-rounded player at this point, and when you dig into the underlying numbers, that really bears out, whereas Cam Makar, as tremendous as he is and the type of season that he's having, shouldn't be downplayed. I just feel like he's a little more offensive than defensive, whereas Quinn is highly developed defensively for his age. So I just, it's more of, I guess, a stylistic thing and thinking about it in terms of the full package. So, yeah, he by a hair, I put him ahead of Makar at this point.
It's part of it, the surprise factor, because obviously a lot of people got to see Makar in the playoffs and thrive there. And, you know, it was a certain having to live up to what he did in the playoffs. And then with Quinn, yeah, there was a short spell at the end of last year, but it's really all anew for him.
Yeah, I mean, that always plays into it, right? We're all human and we all sort of process it.
Yeah.
You know, definitely we have our biases. You can't get away from that. For me, yeah, I mean, I guess you could say that. Like, Cale Makar was pretty incredible during the playoffs last year, so he set things up, like, some pretty high expectations for himself to start this year, and he's certainly met them, maybe even exceeded them. It's just there's something about Quinn and his impact, too, on the Canucks versus, say, Makar's impact on the Avalanche. I think that if you're picking a guy who's more valuable to his team, which isn't necessarily in the definition for the Calder Trophy, the most proficient player, but I do like to factor in, you know, team environment and how they play into that. And I think that Quinn Hughes is just a notch above Cale Makar in that regard.
John, I know fans here in Vancouver really excited to watch Quinn Hughes in the fastest skater competition, as well as Elias Pettersson in the hardest shot competition tonight. Is there a player or two that you're especially excited to observe in the skills competition tonight?
Well, I'd be lying if I didn't say I'm always looking forward to seeing what Shea Weber can do with a slap shot and some open ice and a little bit of runway there. The guy's just an absolute beast, and he's been to, I think it was his seventh All-Star game. I don't know if he's participated in the hardest shot every single time. I would imagine he has. He's just a beast. Like, if you see him without equipment, he looks like he's wearing shoulder pads, and he's just this really powerful human being. So, he's up there. The Shooting Stars event, the new event that they've thrown out there this year, where guys are kind of doing trick shots from the stands. I mean, that alone is making me excited for the skills competition tonight, because it's throwing a wrench into things. You know, you have fastest skater, hardest shot. I guess those are traditional events. You have that best save, the save streak event, which, let's face it, I mean, it's goalies making saves. It's not as exciting as some of the other ones. So the Shooting Stars, looking forward to that, especially with Mitch Marner involved. I think that he'll really get the fans excited on that level. And honestly, I am kind of interested in the fastest skater, too, because you have Connor McDavid going up against Nathan MacKinnon. And, you know, we all like to think that we know that it's McDavid, but you never know, right, on any given day, if MacKinnon can really just jolt ahead and beat him by a couple of you know, a quarter of a second or whatever it may be. So there's that, and there's, you know, there's some dark horses out there, right? Like, I think Chris Kreider's in the fastest skater. I think he's got a chance. I don't think he's going to win, but the fact that all these guys have backed out of the All-Star game has given a platform to guys like Kreider, where maybe he wouldn't have made it, and maybe wouldn't have made it at any point in his career. I guess to kind of display his skills tonight. So I'm looking forward to it.
And John, you mentioned, you know, the new Shooting Stars competition that's debuting tonight. The NHL also added the 3-on-3 game between the Canadian and the American women. They've shown that they're willing to tinker and get creative with All-Star Weekend. Do you think we'll see more changes to the format, not just for the skills competition, but to the actual game in the coming years as well?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know what else they could do with the game. Like, the 3-on-3 format is, I would say, pretty unconventional, considering it's a short tournament. I don't know what they would do, but then again, I'm not in a room trying to think of these things. Like, there are some people in the NHL that are doing that. The skills, I think they should always keep it open-ended. I think, you know, having hardest shot, having fastest skater are staples, and I think that they do attract a lot of attention, a lot of good attention, and show off, you know, some very raw skills. I thought that passing event that they've been doing in previous years was a little too difficult for the players. Like, it sounds crazy, but you don't want to see a guy struggling to get a puck into this tiny little net in the neutral zone. And that was the case. You're watching on TV and you're going, come on, man, hit the net. But really, you think about it, it's like a very difficult thing to do. These guys aren't warmed up. And you know, there's 20,000 people screaming when they're stationary. It's just a very unnatural thing. So I'm glad that they've moved away from that. But yeah, they should, with the skills competition, honestly, it should be, you got your staples and then every year maybe bring in a new event, because you don't want it to become stale. It's kind of a weird event where the guys aren't going 100% anyways. It's catered around sponsors and young kids. So you have to kind of strike that balance of actually finding some entertainment options, so to speak, and actually displaying hockey skills. So that'll be interesting. And I think, honestly, compared to other years, I think this year actually has a pretty good menu of events coming up. So we'll see what ultimately happens. But I do think that this year might be a little special.
John Mattis from The Score joining us a couple more minutes. John, I do want to touch on what's going on this season, not just the All-Star weekend. As we hear at the All-Star break, what stood out to you and what teams have surprised you, basically, as we're getting to the final 30 here?
Well, the first surprise comes to mind is the Columbus Blue Jackets, a team that lost a lot of talent in the offseason. Most notably, Artemi Panarin, who you could argue is having an MVP caliber season with the New York Rangers, just a dynamite player. They lose him. Sergei Bobrovsky obviously isn't having a fantastic year in Florida, but he's still a brand name goalie. He's still a guy that they would have liked to keep. Matt Duchene leaves. Ryan Dzingel, and they've actually been almost better than they were last year, and they've been doing it. Winning hockey games and actually looking like they deserve to win, which is a big difference compared to if you win hockey games and it's lucky. So they've found some magic with the two goalies, Korpisalo and that Elvis character from Latvia, and it's worked out well for them. Obviously, even with all those names leaving town, they still have a Norris type of player in Seth Jones, and they have Zach Werenski, and Pierre-Luc Dubois is a fantastic young player. So they have pieces, but you start, really looking down their lineup and you start scratching your head and Googling a couple of guys, because it just doesn't have the star power. But John Tortorella deserves a lot of props for what he's been able to accomplish so far.
John, you wrote a great article about Aaron Ekblad recently and the bounce back season he's having on pace to be his most productive year in the NHL. And of course, no surprise, no coincidence that Florida is playing some great hockey right now as well. Beyond just Aaron Ekblad's performance, what's been the key for the Panthers as they surge up the Eastern Conference standings here?
Yeah, that's a good. They're kind of like Toronto, to be honest. If you really look at the two rosters and the playing style and the priorities that the coach puts on the players and what he wants them to do out there, star forwards with Barkov and Huberto and Trocheck, and Dadonov's pretty good too. And then, the defense is overall pretty suspect, but has, Aaron Ekblad and Keith Yandel sort of holding things down. So they were waiting for a while for Sergei Bobrovsky to get it back together, and it looks like he has. We'll see if that continues, because the sample size hasn't been large enough to really determine that he's turned things around and has started to live up to his contract. But you add Joel Quenneville, you add just another year on top of that young core, which isn't, I guess, that young anymore. Ekblad, for example, is turning 24 in a couple weeks. But they've been picking away at this thing for a number of years. And I think that they're kind of sick of losing, to be honest. They're sick of being an afterthought, and they've found a way to take advantage of an Atlantic division that's been a little wishy-washy this year. Obviously, Tampa's come on recently. The Leafs have been very up and down. Boston's been actually pretty consistently the top team there. But, Montreal and Buffalo have tailed off. And obviously, the Red Wings are the worst team in the league. So they found a way to stay competitive. Do they ultimately make the playoffs? I don't know. But they put themselves in a really good spot right now. They have a really high points percentage. So what you see in the standings right now is pretty representative of what they've actually been able to accomplish. And I think, Ekblad's a big part of that. I think Barkov, there's always that whole thing. Is he underrated? Is he rated properly? Is he overrated? Because we always talk about him being underrated. And I just think he's a superstar. That's really the way to look at it. And when you have a superstar who's surrounded by guys like Huberto, who puts up 90 points very quietly, and Ekblad, who is a number one defenseman on every team in the league, you get things done. If your depth players are contributing like Noel Atari is and Brett Connolly, the wins will come.
He is John Mattis of the Score NHL. Enjoy the rest of All-Star Weekend in St. Louis, John.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you for giving us some time. Go check him out online. If you are on Twitter, at Mattis with a Z, John, right after. Really good guy, and yeah, it's fascinating to see, you know, what teams have, you know, really stood out, and also Vancouver's in that conversation of teams that have put people on notice. And one of the conversations I want to get into in Canucks Central is, okay, because Canucks are in a different point now of where we were. I mean, I think as recently as last year, the conversation was team tank and team playoffs, and it was basically an effort in futility if you were the team playoffs, because you saw the talent on the team, right? It was more hope versus expectation. And now, I know something you want to get into, just like, has our opinion on tanking changed, or is it working?
Well, I want to say, first of all, yeah, last year was a weird one because both team tank and team playoff felt like ridiculous propositions. It's like, the team's not going to tank because they have Pettersson and Markstrom,
yeah,
and they're also not going to make the playoffs, so it's like, what are we even doing here? Why are we arguing about this? But you're right, and this goes beyond hockey, right? Because tanking has been a cross-sport phenomenon, and it's just interesting. I've never been super anti-tanking. I've never thought it was the only way to build a team, but I've also never hated it as a strategy. But you look around different leagues, and the teams kind of most associated with tanking as a successful strategy and where they are right now, Houston, the shining example of tanking, the Houston Astros, have all of a sudden had all of their success called into question. Mm-hmm. And we still don't know how deep that rabbit hole goes and just how much of their winning they owe to cheating rather than great management. Cleveland Browns, the best example of tanking in the NFL, had a horribly disappointing season. And even in the NBA, the 76ers, of course, the original process team, trust the process, they're a good team, but they're facing some major roadblocks to get to a championship level. And I wonder if we've seen kind of peak tanking culture come and go, and if we're going to start to move away from that, if fans will be less insistent that every rebuilding team has to do a true extreme teardown tank job.
And there's a difference between finishing near the bottom
and tanking
and actively trying to get to that spot. And you could make a case Detroit's kind of doing that right now, or are they just really bad?
Detroit's probably the only tanking team in the NHL right now. I would say they're
But
tanking.
I'm not even sure if that's by design.
Yeah.
I think they just came to a conclusion here that, man, we're just not very good.
We are awful.
And we have to just live through this right now. It's Bick and Nizar, Jamie Dodd. Greg Wyshynski will join us. We'll get into that with him. And also, you know, who's going to be active here in this next little stretch as far as transactions? You know, the NHL world has descended upon St. Louis. Is there murmurs and rumors sending waves throughout the hockey community of what could transpire over the next couple of weeks? We'll get into it with Greg Wyshynski coming up on the other side.